Okay. So the work that we're going to be studying is known as the Aleh Shur. The Aleh Shur was written by Rav Shlomo Volbe, spelled W-O-L-B-E in English. In Hebrew there'd be two Vavs in there. Rav Volbe passed away about 4 years ago in Israel. He was a giant in the world of Musar and Machshava, a giant in the world of Jewish thought, developing personality and personal character traits, developing ability to think about oneself and the world around him. He was just a giant in the Jewish world on that. He was actually a Baal Tshuva. He was raised to a certain point in his life, not religious. I think in Switzerland. Not positive about that. Eventually made his way to Israel and he set up shop there. He printed this as well as the second volume. The second volume, turn around. You see those two right behind you there? One, that's volume. Those are both the second volume. They're about double the size of this. He printed them both anonymously. Eventually, as all things go, it only lasted so long until everybody knew who it was. But his name is not mentioned anywhere in the books. They're printed about 20 years apart. Very difficult Hebrew. It's a modern Hebrew, the actual way that he wrote. Hard to understand. I remember the piece that we're going to study together, which is his introduction to the first volume. I remember where I was in Israel, just spending a long time just reading it, like 3 or 4 times, just trying to understand the words. Forget about what's he saying? But it's a very deep, it's very personal. It's what we call an avoda. He's big into that concept. We're going to define avoda. What does avoda literally mean?
Service.
So there's what's like being an oved, literally to be an eved, a servant of Hashem, to work on oneself, to work on one's. I had a Rebbe, I had the privilege, the idea of this came from when I was in yeshiva near Yisrael. I was at a stage where I was taping everything, classes that I would go to. So I would go to a class and I would put my little tape recording. There's always people who do that. So I was one of them. And I'd put my thing on there and I would record it. And I was accumulating just hours and hours of stuff that I listened to. Never, but I was eventually at one point going to listen to all of this stuff. So when I was in yeshiva near Yisrael, this is already now after high school, I was in Israel for 2 years. So this is post high school, post 2 years of study in Israel. So I guess I'm 19, 20, 21 at that point. And there was a Tuesday night Musar Vad. Vad is a group. We got together. That's what, so. And the way that this particular Vad worked was that whoever organized it would get different speakers. In yeshiva, one of the advantages of being in yeshiva is they have all these extracurricular kinds of stuff like that. You know, class on this late at night, or class on that. So this was every Tuesday night for an hour, late at night, like after all of the regular learning was done, and you never knew who was giving it that day. You'd show up, and it was like one of the older Kogel guys or one of the Rebbeim. So 2 consecutive weeks, there were older Kogel guys who gave it. They're both now Rebbeis in yeshiva, but this is 10 years ago, they were just in Kogel all the time. And for 2 consecutive weeks, I put my tape recorder in front, and they both said, camera recorder. So the first time it happened, I gave a shmooze. Like, it wasn't like this amazing shmooze. Sometimes when people do that, it's because they're talking about really sensitive stuff that they don't want to have recorded. This is even before like YouTube, and you can post things online. This is just, he just didn't want to. But it was like a regular shmooze. The next week was a different Rebbe, and also the same story. He said, no. But he said to me, if you want to know why, you can ask me afterwards. So went to the shmooze, and I asked him afterwards. Said, what's the deal with the recording? So he said, not in these words, but this is the idea that I have gotten out of it, that when you're taping something, so you're taping it in order to have when? Sometime later. That I want you to learn to live in the moment that you're in now. What if I miss something? So you missed it. Get what you get. Sit there. Listen. Concentrate. Absorb what you can absorb. And if you didn't get it, whatever you didn't get, you didn't get. Next week, you'll go to another shmooze. You'll live life next week. Don't live life now preparing for then. You say, what I see when guys tape record things, and even when they take notes, what they're doing is they're so busy making sure that the tape stopped and they run to make sure that it gets flipped and they got it turned on and they got it turned off and that someone's in charge, or they're taking notes and they're writing. And all that they're doing is that you're taking the words from my mouth and it's just like going through your head, into your arm, onto the paper, and you sort of miss the important stop in between, which is in your heart. It just, okay, great. Now you got my shmooze on tape. Now you got it on a piece of paper. That wasn't the point. The point is, what'd you get inside? So sit, listen, pay attention, get what you get, absorb the lesson, and then you'll move on. And if you didn't get something, that's fine. You'll get it next week. You'll get new inspiration from somewhere else in life. So that opened up a whole new concept. I mean, here I was this major taper, and here was a guy saying, like, not into that approach. So I started based on that. A friend and I asked one of those turban to give us these types of chavurah. We would meet once a week, and he would basically, it wasn't added to his book, but it was this type of thought process that we're going to go through. We would start working on ourselves. And he used to ask us, if I tell you, aren't you thinking about something? But I don't want it to be Torah, and I don't want it to be God. What would you think about? The answer is yourself. Think about yourself. Where am I holding? How am I doing? What are the kinds of things I think about? How's my relationship with my wife, with my friends, with myself, my parents, my siblings? Just where am I in life? And that's not something that we're really trained, accustomed to thinking about. So this opened up a whole new way of thinking for me, introduced me to these works. And that's a very brief introduction. It's just the kinds of things, the topics, ideas that we're going to get into. So I want to actually start with a photocopied for you is his introduction. This is his introduction to his first work. It's about 5 pages long. I have no idea whether or not this is going to take us 3 months or 30 minutes. I'm leaning towards the 3 months. There's a lot of stuff in here, and we'll see how it goes. We're going to debate. We're going to work back and forth whether or not we'll read in Hebrew and I'll translate, or I'll just say it over. I'm not quite sure how to do it yet, but we'll play that by ear. Let's jump right in. Ready? Enough of an introduction. First paragraph is basically just, we're not going to really read through. He's basically just saying, I'm going to give you an introduction. This is not going to be the way that we're going to work through the rest of the work, he says. The rest of the book is going to be much more involved in details. This is going to be an overview. Now, what I did is for the next paragraph, which is a key paragraph, the second paragraph, I photocopied for you in English in the back of your packets. So I want to go through that because of its importance. I want you to be able to follow along without having to be boggled down. It's the second and third and fourth to last pages. Two more. It should look like this. Page 11, 10 and 11, towards the back. And we're going to be studying. Now, this is from a work known as the Chovos HaLevavos. The Chovos HaLevavos, Duties of the Heart, if you haven't seen it, it translated into English, is a work by Bachia, I think, even. Yeah, he's one of them. So he wrote a sefer called the Chovos HaLevavos. The basic gist of this sefer, as the words imply, the duties of the heart, is in which he went through so many times in Judaism we get caught on the mitzvahs of the body, the things that we have to do physically. But he writes, there's a whole series of mitzvahs that are the responsibilities of the heart. A person has to think certain things, or has to believe in certain things. So he wrote a book specifically detailing those types of obligations and those types of mitzvahs. So the paragraph that we're about to read is taken from the Chovos HaLevavos, the duties of the heart, his introduction to his book. So it's the, what we're going to read inside is the very bottom paragraph. I actually have an abridged version, so I'm just going to follow along here. Min ha-seichel sh'amati. He's proving from the point of view of reason why he's correct in assuming that there are two categories of mitzvahs. Ki kfar nisbar lano. It is already, as we know, when I read through the Hebrew, tell me what's more comfortable. Should I read it straight through the English or Hebrew translate?
I like the Hebrew translate, personally.
Yeah, okay. So you have the English on the left, as you could do there. Ki ha'adam mechubar minefesh v'guf. Man, the way Hashem created us, is a combination of the neshama and guf. From a nefesh, neshama, from the concept of a soul and the concept of a body together. This is a concept which we are all familiar with, and he begins with that idea. Now, what he's going to do is he's going to define it in an interesting way. Let's start on our own. If we have to define the difference, if we have to categorize the neshama versus the guf, how would we go about categorizing those two entities?
Spiritual
spiritual versus the physical aspects of the body.
Excellent. Spiritual aspect versus the physical aspect. Perfect. What else? That's good.
They had different desires.
Different desires. Follow that up. What kind of? What does that mean? Different desires.
I think that your soul desires. I mean, obviously your body desires like food and rest and things like that. I think the soul desires, I think, connection.
Okay.
With other people and with God.
Excellent. So putting the two together, we would have the body, physical, desiring physical things, and our soul, spiritual, desiring spiritual things. Connection, spiritual pursuits, and things like that. Excellent. Anything else? You would agree with that? I would agree with that also. I think in the way that most of us conceptualize, categorize those two entities, body and soul, that's how we would do that. We'd sort of put it, I think, almost good and bad. I think I would almost add to that, like body, bad, evil, physical, filled with desire, and then you put the soul in terms of categorizing it as good, pure, spiritual, desiring spiritual pursuits, and then there's that constant clash between the body and all of its physical desires, its badness, and the soul and all of its goodness, desiring of spiritual good types of pursuits. That'd be a fair categorization. So Chavos HaVavos is going to say a chiddush. He's going to say a novel way. He's going to define this different than what we would have defined it as. Again, ki ha'adam mechubar minefesh v'gof. Mankind is a combination of physical and spiritual, body and soul. Ushnehem mitovos habore alein. And both of them are from the great favors, the good things, kindness that Hashem has done. Right away, not saying one is bad and one is good, one is evil and one is positive and pure. They're both of the tovos, they're both part of the kindness that Hashem did in creating us. Ha'echad nireh, v'hasheni eino nireh. What does that mean? One is nireh. What does it mean to be nireh?
To see something?
One is seen, and the other one is not seen. How does he define the difference between the guf and the neshama? One you can see, and one you can't see. Says the Chovos HaVavos, v'anachnu chayovim la'avodoso ba'avor zeh. We are then obligated to serve Hashem because of this, meaning because what we are, our makeup is part body, part soul, read, part seen. Our body is seen, part unseen. We have to serve Hashem with an avoda gluya, the avoda tzvuna. We have a service of Hashem which needs to be seen, done by our body, and we have a service of Hashem which needs to be done in a way that cannot be seen, because we have a component of our essence which is not seen, and He is connecting the body seen with a seen avoda gluya, revealed type of service, and the neshama needs to then serve in a hidden way because it's not seen. If you don't understand fully, it's fine. We're just getting started. Hagluya. What is the gluya? Means goli, means to reveal. To reveal the type of service that we require to do is chovos ha'ivarim, the obligations upon our physical limbs, our body. Kimo hatzvila, a person has to daven, which is interesting that he puts that in the, right? We would have actually put davening as, but let's leave that aside for now. Hatzom, fasting, tztaka, giving charity, tztaka, lima Torah, sitting and learning, va'asoy sukkah, v'lulav, v'tzitzis, u'mezuzah, umaka, every morning, put your tzitzis on, go put your tefillin on, get yourself to davening. I'm assuming that's what he means when he says tefillah, like actually physically going and doing
it.
Even though the actual tefillah is your mindset, but you have to go daven. I have to dedicate time to go daven. So all of these things are things which are done, are serving Hashem with my physical being, my body, in a way that anyone can look at me and say, oh, he's doing X, Y, or Z. When you shake your lulav, everybody knows you're shaking your lulav.
That's the chiddush, right? We always say that the physical actions are, in a sense, the way your neshama is satisfied. It's not satisfied by physical acts just by themselves, but when you mekadesh something, that's what satisfies you.
Okay, so we're gonna let's work through another word. Let's develop the thought. He's gonna not say exactly like that, but he is saying again. What he's defining it as says, look, You got two parts to your essence. You have a physical part and a spiritual part. Your physical part is seen. It's therefore obligated to serve in a way that is seen. It's clear what you're doing. And now you're going to have a spiritual part. We can't see that. I don't see your neshama. So he says, oh, well then, you're going to have to serve Hashem in a way that can't be seen. Let's continue. And all things similar to this, in the end of the third line, Mimasha Yigomir Ma'aseyu Al Yidei Chushei Ha'odom Hanirin, all of these acts which are carried out by a body which can be seen by anybody else. Acha Avoda Hatzvuna, what about the hidden type of service that we have? Hidden because our neshama is hidden. Hichovas Halavavas, these are the obligations, the duties of our hearts. This is that we acknowledge the oneness of Hashem in our hearts. And that we believe in Him, and we believe in His Torah. And we accept upon ourselves the responsibility of His service. And that we fear Him. And that we humble ourselves before Him. And we're embarrassed by our actions, the things that we do, because we know that He sees. That sense of embarrassment, that's an avoda. It says, when I'm embarrassed in front of someone, it's a recognition someone else is there and I did something that I shouldn't have done. I'm only embarrassed if I recognize another person's there and they know that I shouldn't have done it and I know that they know that it... Mm-hmm. So when I actually feel a little bit embarrassed of something that I've done, that's an avoda safuna. That's a hidden type of avoda, but it's one which recognizes you're there and I respond internally to that, because I recognize your presence. I humble myself before you. No one knows that I'm doing that. I mean, you don't know what in the world is going on inside my head right now. I might be thinking, look at me, I'm the biggest, greatest scholar in the world, teaching all these guys, and that's a horrible failure. But you wouldn't know the difference, because it's all, this is within myself, the thought process that I have, the way that I recognize the world around me. All of those things are all in the non-revealed form of avoda. V'ne'ehav, also finishing up his list, loving Hashem, v'nivtach bo, trusting in Him, v'nimser nafsho, saying away love, being willing to give up our lives and our souls to Him or for Him, v'shenifrosh me'asher yisnan, and separating ourselves from things which He doesn't like and He hates, u'sheniyachin ma'aseinu l'shmo, and that our actions should be done for His sake. Whatever actions we do, who knows why we're doing them? Person, the classic example, a person takes a nap in the middle of the day. He takes a nap because he says, I'm lazy and I just want to escape life, or because I have service to do and I need my strength. I don't know why you're doing that. I don't know, I'm not feeling well, I want to get better. Whether or not the person's eating because I need to have strength to be able to go about my day and serve Hashem, or I'm eating because I like fit food. So that thought process, no one knows what's going on. That's all between you and God. All of these things, and then you should contemplate the goodness of Hashem. All of these things, all of these things which culminates in the meditation of the heart and conscience, with no dependence on the service of the body. Nothing at all. I remember I was once at a shmooz I heard from Rav Noach Weinberg. Noach Weinberg is the dean of Eishet Torah in Yerushalayim. So he was saying, he's pulling something out from his history of being in Jerusalem. He had met a guy, talented young athletic guy who had a horrific skiing accident and became a paraplegic, and went through the struggles that most young, energetic, athletic, good-looking, talented young men go through when their life was, the snap of the fingers totally changed. So he's sitting in this hospital bed for hours on end, I forgot exactly the way that he presented it, basically getting to the point where he began to question, well, like, now what's the point of life? And then he started crying, he says to Rav Noach Weinberg when he eventually met up with him. He said, now is the first time, now that I can't ski, and I can't hang out, and I can't party, is the first time that it occurred to me to ask the question, well, what's the point of all of this? This idea that he's saying, says, you have your physical body, you have all of those things that you need to do that. There's a whole other world of those chovos halvavos, the obligations of one's heart, which are not at all dependent on that. Nothing would change at all. A person who was working on that wouldn't have that, like that experience of like, well, now what? You've been doing something, you've been working on half of the entire program anyway the entire time. None of that is contingent. So we, who are very weak, not just a guy who's some young secular guy skiing, people who are learning are weak on working on that aspect of our lives. And we also would have that same struggle if Rachmana was on something that would happen. But the reality is, someone who is working on that always, it's, all right, so you just now... So no, I no longer put on tefillin, but I'm doing so many other things anyway. It would just be a smooth transition almost into one, something like that. But in any case, that's his introduction. This is what's quoted here in the second paragraph. He begins, this is this. Okay, let's, Revolva has one paragraph. Back to your front page. Yeshnam Bazeh, third paragraph. Yeshnam Bazeh, we have in this Shnei Chidushim Hatzrichim Iyun. We have two Chidushim, two in the third paragraph. Two Chidushim which require further study. Two things that the Chovos HaLevavos said, which we need to understand. Ha'echad, the first thing that he said, which was a novel approach, Hagdoros Guf V'Nefesh, the defining of the body and the soul, Kenira Ve'Eino Nira. The way that he defined it is, one is seen, and one is not seen. We did not define it that way. When I threw out the question and I said, let's categorize, let's understand, how should we define body, how should we define soul, we came up with, you know, good, pure, spiritual, craving connection versus evil, physical, craving physical things. That's what we came up with. And he doesn't define it that way. He defines it as, I can see one, and I can't see the other. I don't see good, evil. I don't see pure, impure. I don't see spiritual, physical. I just see, can't be seen. Asher lefi havanoso havanoseno, which says Revolva, but according to our understanding, the primary havana ikarasi, the main way we would have defined it would have been haguf is chomer kosher lera, something physical connected to evil. The hanefesh and the soul is ruchnius hakshur l'kedusha, is spiritual, connected to holiness. The loma bochar hachovos halvavos. Why did the author of the sefer hachovos halvavos choose the havchanat studis l'chayra, that which would seem to be tangential? The fact that one is seen and one can't be seen, that would seem to have been, you know, a side point. The main thing is spiritual versus physical. Why does he define it like that? That's number one. Shanis, the second point that we need to understand is Mizboir Boza, he explains that in this paragraph that we just finished studying, Ki guf v'nefesh mechayovim shnei sugei avoda, that the body and the soul require two categories of service. Two separate ways of serving Hashem. One with a physical way of serving Him, tefillin, tzitzis, mezuzah, kashrus, and then with a unseen form of serving Him. And specifically, the dafka lefiha hagdara hanal, specifically in the way that he defined it, one which is seen, one which is not seen, this requires further understanding. Okay, so far so good. So on the table, we have the two types. We have seen, unseen, two types of service based on the guf and the neshama, the body and the soul. And the questions we need to understand, what's the deal with that? Why do we define it that way? And what does that mean for us that some type of our service is seen and some type is not seen? Okay. How is it working with the reading and translating? Does that work? Okay. Let's move on. Aleph. Divrei hachovos halavavos noigin ba'etzem inyan guf nefesh. These words that we just read of the chovos halavavos, to say for the duties of our touch in the principal concept, the primary idea of this body and soul, this duality that we're created with. Asher yitziras ha'odom ba'atzma, that the very creation of man himself, mechayeves osonu lehizboinen. Man, the creation of man, forces us, requires of us, to be his boinen. His boinen is going to be a key word, we're going to read that word a lot. Lehizboinen means to contemplate, to look into something, to think about. man's creation forces us to think about the following question. And he quotes the way that the Ramchal, Rav Moshe Chaim Lutzato, asks the question. What's the question? Mazos asa Elokim guf v'neshama kishtei yitzirs. What's the pshat? Why is it that Hashem created man with two components? There's a physical body, and then there's a spiritual soul. And he took the two, and he melded it into one. V'lo yitzira achas. Why didn't he just figure out a way, which he obviously could have, of creating man in a way where it's not these two separate entities always struggling with each other. It's just one entity. Metzias achas, one essence, without a combination of two things. Why is that? We're so used to this concept that I remember when I first saw this, like that was actually the first time that I thought of that question. Like that never bothered me. Because
yeah.
That's what you go up with. There's the concept of a body and a soul. And we sort of take that for granted. So we have the animal world, which has more body and much less soul, and you have these angels. But it never really bothered me as a question. That's interesting. Well, couldn't he have done it where it's just a unified somehow without this two-step? It's like almost hard to visualize what that would be like because we live in the reality of our world is that it's there are two distinct points. They clash, they fight, we have these struggles within ourselves. But says the Ramchal, asks the Ramchal, Rav Moshe Chaim Lutzato, why is that? Four lines down. Shuvasuhi. What was his answer? Middle of the line, four lines down. Ho Elokim, also haguf hazeh choymer of the choshech. He made, Hashem made our body very physical. Literally, his words translate as follows. Av means thick, and choshech means dark. So he created a dark, thick, physical being. Bilti ro'i le'or, be'or kedushaso yisbarach. That is not fit. It's not capable of being lit up with the light of Hashem. Physical body, one of our two essences, was made in a way where in its natural state, it can't absorb, like the words I'm using are, I'm just trying to like use finding the words for the concepts that he's trying to explain here. It's not fit. It can't take the light of Hashem's pureness and holiness because it's so lowly in its physical essence and creations. Ki ein lavo el shar hamelach. This is a quote from Megillus Esther. A lot of times they write on borrowing phrases from Tanakh. So Esther said to Mordechai, you must take off your sackcloth. Ki ein lavo b'shar hamelach. You can't come into the king's courtyard dressed in sackcloth. So he borrows that phraseology and says, the body, which is so lowly, so physical, so thick and dark, it can't come to the king's presence, Hashem's purity and light, in its current state, ulevaker beheicholo, and to visit, also a pasuk from Tehillim, ela shleimei hahachana. You need to be complete in your preparation. So the body, as it's created in its pure physical form, isn't fit to stand before the king, because the only one who has completely prepared himself can then stand before the king. You can't just walk in. You need to prepare yourself. V'zeh ha-choshech ha-mutbo v'chuko shel ha-guf. In this darkness, which is the natural state of the body, who ha-son b'kirbo as kol ha-taivos ha-ro'os ha-sholtos bo. That's where we have, it houses all of our desires that rule over it. Like James, like what you were saying, that is how we would define the body, without question. It's the house, the seat of all of our desires. The oso olul, and it makes it susceptible to all bad things which find the body. That's because of its again, dark, thick, seat of all passion, desire, all those things. Okay, there's those shenis also haneshama tahora, and a separate entity, not one unified, two things. He then created or made a pure soul, hachatzuva mitachas kisei hakavod, which was hewn from underneath the throne of glory itself, a piece of godliness. V'horida v'nafcha b'soich haguf hazeh, and he then blew it into the nostrils of men, instilled this physical body with the soul of godliness, letaharo ulekacho, to purify it and to sanctify it. The idea that you were saying before. An example that the sages use is they say a king sent out word to his workers that he's going to make them a huge feast. And they should prepare themselves. Now the workers who are working out in the fields are always sullied and muddied, and it would take time to clean themselves off and be able to then be able to sit in front of the king. So the way the sages describe it is they say the wise ones amongst the workers said, listen, the king can be ready at any moment. It's not going to take the king much time. We need to start preparing ourselves now. And so they went about shining up their shoes and getting their clothing cleaned and pressed so that they would look clean by the time the feast and banquet was called for. And the not-so-smart ones amongst them, the sages say, said, king's making a feast. We're going to know about it. It's going to take him a ton of time to get ready. We'll continue working. And when we hear that he's getting ready, we'll go clean ourselves off. Sure enough, word comes without notice, the king is ready. And those who were wearing their nice, fancy, cleaned-off clothing were welcomed into the banquet hall, and those who were still sullied were turned away. So you just say, so that's what, like, yeah, we're born with a physical body, and the body is dirty, it's dark, it's thick, clothed in darkness and desire. Into that body came a neshama. The purpose of that neshama, to purify and to clean, and through the neshama's work, to polish the body. The body, and I always like bringing this example, I'm sure you've heard it from me, but it's so worth stating. Psychologists write that when a baby is born, it has no self-awareness outside of itself. Like an infant doesn't even have the wherewithal to know that there is anything outside of itself. Meaning, I'm hungry, I cry. It can't even cognitively, like, doesn't know that that's what's going on. Just, like, feel some sort of pain, I cry. When I'm uncomfortable, like, that's its world. Doesn't see, comprehend, like, nothing. That's our starting point. So the lack of self-awareness and selfishness is a given. That's how the body starts. Before the neshama can kick in, it's just pure body. A two-year-old is a selfish creature. We don't have complaints when a two-year-old is selfish. We don't say when a two-year-old has its toy taken and it wallops the other kid over the head. We're not like, wow, why did he do that? We get it. Right? Two-year-old is all about me. You took my stuff. I wallop you. Our job as parents is to then teach and instruct and raise to be not that way, to actually think about someone else. But that the starting point is selfishness, that's a given. And that's the way that is all the way through life. It's just that we always, sometimes we're a little bit behind where we're supposed to be. Sometimes the 15-year-old, we also expect a certain level of selfishness, but it's a little bit better than the 3-year-old. And the 23-year-old, it should be better than the 15-year-old, but not. And if, sometimes we get stuck at a certain point, like almost live through life stuck in a level of selfishness. But it's all about taking our own physical selfishness and moving past it, becoming self-aware and interested in doing more than that, being more than that, as we go through life. That's the task of the neshama. The neshama comes in, the soul comes into the body and says, let's get to work. We're going to start polishing, we're going to start cleaning, we're going to start getting the mud off the boots. Because that's how he made the boots. God gave us dirty boots. He gave us a body which is filled with desire, selfish desires, all sorts of bodily pleasure desires. And the neshama says, we're going to work on this. We're going to purify, we're going to sanctify and make that holy. End of the line, 5 lines from the bottom. V'zeh ma shetzorech lehovin. And this is what you have to understand, he writes. Ki ein sof hakavona devias haneshovim beguf. The purpose of the entering of the neshama into the guf is not l'shetichya oso v'chayei ha'hevel ha'ela. God did not create a system where he made a neshama to enter into a guf so that the guf can live and live its life the way that it pleases. That's not the purpose of the neshama, to give life to the body. Oh, great. I have an neshama now. Excellent. Now that I got this body and it's working, it's up and running, let's go experience all the physical pleasures of life. Let's go do what I want. Thank you, neshama, for giving me life. If it wouldn't be for you, gosh, I would just be dead on the ground. But Baruch Hashem, I have this holy godliness spark within me. Now I can fulfill every desire that I have. No. That's not the purpose of why the neshama was there, is that now you've been given life. Ella, three lines from the bottom. Iker Biobo, the main purpose, primary and the reason why the neshama was placed in man. Lezachech oso zichuch mamish, to purify it. Literally, an entire purity. Lehaaloso, to raise it, mishefel madregoso, from its lowliness, achomis, its physical lowly level, el hamadrego haeliona lihios kamalachei hasharis. The purpose of the neshama is to make the body as pure as malachim who never even had a body. To take the goal, malach, pure spiritual, to be able to take something like that and say, well, you know what? I'm going to now take a body which is starting on the opposite end of the spectrum, but I'm going to work, and I'm going to purify, I'm going to polish, and polish, and polish again, and then it's going to get dirty again, and I'm going to scrub it like a new pair of shoes. Come out so nice. And you wear it around a little bit, and it gets a little bit dirty. You scrub, and you scrub, and you keep scrubbing. Ask John Gross, our army guy, if you remember John in Iraq. So his shoes were sparkling. I used to make fun of him because, you know, I didn't have shoes like that. But I'm like, wow, look at those. How long does it take to get it that way? You would say, over an hour. And that was part of their routine on the base during their off time, whenever they would be chatting on the phone or eating. You wouldn't just be doing nothing. You would be polishing your shoes because that's the time it took. Spit and shine, whatever that's called.
Something like that.
It takes time. And that's what the body comes in dirty. You got to shine it. It doesn't stay that way. It gets a little bit dirty again. And it's a constant work to keep it shined. But the goal is to get it shined, keep it shined, and then return it, not in the state that it came in which it was only thinking about itself, a pure physical entity, selfish, into its own desires. I have purified and made it shine and sparkle. You know, you wouldn't even know the difference between your malachim up there and me down here. My body has become so purified and sanctified by the neshama in it. Dover zeh matzanu kfar b'Moshe Rabbeinu. This was what Moshe Rabbeinu accomplished. Shezocha v'zichech eschem rioso, he purified and sanctified his physical being. Ad sheshov l'madregas malach mamish. He became like an angel. Where do we see that? Because he lived for 40 days and 40 nights on Har Sinai, without food, without water, without anything. Because he took his... Why do we need to eat? Why do we need to drink? Why do we need to sleep? Well, from the physical aspect of her body. So Moshe had accomplished such a level of polish on his body, he had literally become like one of the angels. And for a period at its peak, where he's talking with Hashem, he's up there in Har Sinai receiving the Torah, had purified his body so that he became like an angel almost. His body became like an angel. And when he came down, he had to put a mask on because his physical body was shining the light of spirituality out of it. Because why does our soul not shine through our body?
Because it's schmutzy.
It's thick, it's dark, and it's dirty. And so the soul doesn't shine through. Moshe Rabbeinu came down from Har Sinai and you saw through his skin. There's a medrash. How do you spell or? How do you spell skin in Hebrew?
Ayin
vav resh is or for skin. So or for light is with an aleph. So the midrashim that talk about certain people having a sefer Torah where the aleph and the ayin were swept, like it said, right, when Hashem created light skin, like as if the light came through the skin. Whatever, another talk. But that Moshe's skin radiated the light, the aura of his skin radiated the light of his neshama, because there wasn't anything stopping it. It was almost like glass. So our neshama is housed in body with all of our desires and all of our thoughts and all the things that go through our mind and all the things that come out of our mouth and all the things that we want and the foods that we eat. So it doesn't shine forth. You know, when you see, if you ever had a chance to see a gadol or a Talmud Chacham, and there's a certain radiance to their face.
Yeah.
It just, it shines. There's a smile. There's something there. There's less of that blockage. People, you read a lot about a person from their face. You almost can see their spiritual holdings because there's a certain shine, there's a certain smile, because it's coming through in a way. And sometimes you see people and it's just, you can almost see, it's like almost like this, like you're repulsed. There's something gruff, something very rough. And it's, there's a lot, the Bali Kabbalah talk, you know, a lot about that. And I'm barely scratching the surface, I know nothing about it. But there's something there, just in terms of how much the neshama shines through a person so you can see it. That's the purpose of what the neshama is doing.
It's interesting you say that. Someone told me that when I was in Israel, and I didn't believe him. It seemed ridiculous. It took me to meet Rav Nevenzahl in the Old City. And it's true what you're saying. It's hard even to describe it. I took another friend of mine telling him that, you know, he thinks I'm crazy. He met him and said the same thing. You know, he said he smiled. This shine to his face.
So Moshe had to put a mask on because the people couldn't take it. It was the spirit. This is in the Chumash when he came down from Har Sinai. Had to put a real quick to Kikaranor Pnei Moshe. There was a had to put a mask because his light was beaming, a spiritual light that they couldn't handle. So he had to wear a mask when he would speak to the people to be able to speak to them.
I have a question.
Yeah.
So if the soul and the body are two different entities, and the soul is to purify the body.
Mm-hmm.
What is the mind? Where does the mind belong to? Because the mind controls, I imagine it controls both in a way.
Yes. The short answer would be the soul, something which is not seen. In other words, it's the thought processes. That'll be more of a discussion of the difference between the mind and the heart. But the simple answer would be more the soul. As when the Ramban talks about God blowing into Adam the breath of life, the neshama, he writes that was the seichel which distinguished him, the ability to think from the other animal creatures. That's all part of. That's not body. That's more of the soul. It's seen. It's a physical entity. So you can break down. Doctors can break down the brain into the smallest neurons, so it's something which is seen, but Rabbi Tatz has a whole piece on this. And the way that he goes through this process, he says, why do you want what you want? And why does your arm do whatever, you know, you raise up your arm? So he says, well, the doctors will say, well, because your mind sent a message to your arm to move the muscle. How did that message come? So they'll say, well, there's a neuron that was sent from your brain, and it went down. Okay, what made the neuron fire? Well, the neuron fired because. You go back to the point. You say, well, why did that first neuron? Why? What made that happen? What made that first impulse? And that the doctors have nothing for.